एषते विहितः सांख्ये बुद्धिर्योगे द्विमां शृणु बुद्ध्या युक्तो यज्ञपार्थः कर्मयोगस्यसि. And let's read the translation. Thus far, I have described this knowledge to you through analytical study. Now listen as I explain it in form of working without fruity results. O son of Pritha, when you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. So this is the next section. 39 through 53 expands the verse 38, which taught us sukha dukkha samakritva, become equal in happiness and distress. Did anybody try this exercise? Who tried this exercise? 1, 2, 3, 4. 4, okay. Thank you very much. the next section expands on the point of how to act. So what was the next, what was the first argument by Arjuna? Compassion. So Krishna's answer was Sankhya Yoga, who you are compassionate to. Then what was the second argument by Arjuna?
Enjoyment.
So then dharma or duty is the key to enjoyment. So he said, well, if you want to enjoy, then you have to perform your dharma. So he explained that in the previous section. So now what was the third argument by Arjuna?
Sinful
reaction. So now he deals with the sinful reaction and he says, karma bandham prahasyasi. Not only you will be free from sin, because again, Arjuna spoke on a lower platform language, he spoke only about sin. Krishna includes sin in his answer in this next section, 39 to 53. But he says, karma bandham prahasyasi. You will be free not only from sinful reactions, but you will be from karma in general. You will be completely free, because even though pious reactions seem to be enjoyable, they still bind us. And they can make us proud, which will again create a cause for hellish suffering or falling down to hell, yeah, which we see happening a lot. Pardon? This is already, the first one, what did you say?
Sankhya.
Yes, Sankhya. This is Karma Yoga or Buddha Yoga?
So this same thing is...
From the other side. Sankhya, and this is Buddha Yoga. So Prabhupada explains the Sankhya. Sankhya in general means counting, perfect or complete counting. So basically we see what is the reality. We count the tattvas or... what's really existing, and we look for the reality. So that was the previous part, which is more like a jnana yoga, so explaining the nature of the soul, and we can see that most of this explanation was in the negative. Most of this explanation was in the negative. Cannot, in, ah, non, and so forth, an. So now we have the positive approach, more positive approach, of how to act without any reaction, so how to be free. Prabhupada writes here in the purport, that's like 9 lines down on the break of the page, Krishna therefore wanted to explain to Arjuna that by killing the body of his grandfather, he would not be killing the soul proper. And he explained that all individual persons, including the Lord himself, are eternal individuals. They were individuals in the past, they are individuals in the present, and they will continue to remain individuals in the future, because all of us are individual souls eternally. We simply change our bodily dress in different manners, but actually we keep our individuality even after liberation from the bondage of material dress. An analytical study of the soul and the body has been very graphically explained by Lord Krishna. So then he differentiates this from the atheistic Sankhya, Because there is atheistic Sankhya. Sankhya in itself, and we have some modern forms of atheistic Sankhya. You have so many modern scientists who like Buddhism, who accept Buddhism, who accept some kind of Mayavad outlook on the world, which is in a way nice because it brings them closer to spirituality, but which still doesn't give the positive knowledge of what's actually there beyond, what's actually this invisible, inconceivable entity that moves everything. And our main problem with Sankhya is mentioned in the Vedanta Sutra. Prabhupada mentions this here in the middle of that. He says, the description in the Vedas indicates that the Lord glanced over the Prakriti or nature and impregnated it with atomic individual souls. So the Lord is the mover. Spirit is the mover. So our main problem with Sankhya is that it invests the machine with ultimate energy or with ultimate responsibility, the machine of material nature. That's our main problem. But actually, the machine is dead. It's moving, but the machine itself is dead. It doesn't have life. It has to be created by someone. It has to be maintained by someone. It has to be directed by someone. Even if you have a perfect software to direct some machine, all software engineers know. Still, you need a person to iron out the bugs and whatever. And still, you get out all the bugs, and then all of a sudden, some clash from another program, and you know the program goes into the loop. So you still need a person. However nicely, even if you write the perfect software, you know, Krishna probably has written a perfect software. It's not the live person. It's not the live person. So that's our problem with Sankhya, with atheistic Sankhya. So the theistic Sankhya, it doesn't stop with matter, and it actually begins not from matter, but it begins from this from the Lord, from whom everything expands. Otherwise, we have no problem with Sankhya. So, and Prabhupada speaks about the last snare of Maya, the last, you know, like people catch birds in, how you call it? It's not kletka, sometimes there is a loop, paska? Past. Okay. So to think that we are God. So Prabhupada writes here again, here Sankhya means analytical description of the body and the soul. Lord Krishna made an analytical description of the soul just to bring Arjuna to the point of Buddhi Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. You can see how he uses this interchangeably, Buddhi and Bhakti. So he will speak a lot about Buddhi Yoga. So what is Buddhi? So Buddhi, we will speak about, you also have in your study guides, you have the yoga ladder. So Buddhi, it begins from where a person consciously, from Nishkama Karma, where a person consciously works on renouncing attachments. So that already involves Buddhi. And it can go all the way to Bhakti Yoga. In other words, it's not mechanical. It's a conscious work on your heart. This is one part of Buddhi Yoga, yes? When you consciously renounce some attachments in the heart.
Where does it lie between Jnana and Karma?
Where? The line?
Where it lies in Buddhi Yoga.
I always accepted that it begins with Nishkama Karma Yoga. Nishkama Karma Yoga. When the person consciously renounces the attachments to fruits.
And Bhakti Yoga and Buddhi Yoga the same thing?
And it goes all the way to Bhakti Yoga. We can discuss this yoga ladder, the steps of yoga, in two ways. There are two ways to progress about them. One way is in the school of bhakti, and another way is outside of the school of bhakti. So if you do it with the ultimate goal of bhakti, it moves very fast. Prabhupada gives the example of the elevator pulling, or somebody pulling you. You have mercy of God pulling you, higher taste pulling you. And but the floors, the stories, or the steps are still, you know, we pass similar steps. Or a person can go about it outside the school of bhakti, where still we have to accept some bhakti. There is no possibility of anything, achieving anything without some kind of bhakti, but then bhakti becomes secondary. So that's this is what we do not encourage. This is not what we recommend. So bhakti should always be primary. And that's what Krishna recommends here.
So would you include bhakti in the school?
Yes, yes.
Buddhi yoga cannot be transcendental if there is no bhakti.
There cannot be buddhi yoga, there cannot be any yoga without bhakti. There cannot be even karma kanda if there is no some touch of bhakti. Even karma kanda works by touch of bhakti. Because even in karma kanda, the brahmana gets up in the morning and says, Om pavitra pavitra va sarvastam gato vayak smrat pundari kaksham sabha yadandara skuchihi Om Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. He says Sri Vishnu, right? Purely material motives, he wants to, just to enjoy it. But only by grace of some touch of bhakti can he avoid hell and go to heaven, even. So some touch of bhakti is there. That's explained by Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur very nicely in the Bhagavatam 6.2.9. Commentary about the name. I can send it to Sister Matka Zabarjavani. It's a very beautiful commentary. So, yeah. So the difference is, what is first? There is two terms that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains. When bhakti is the main thing, or bhakti is just an instrument that we use. Like even Mayavadis, they say, bhakti, oh, very good, very good. Do bhakti, very nice, nice, nice verse, very nice. But why? Just so you can focus your mind, you know, and then, you know, just kick him out. You yourself are on the altar. So that's not bhakti at all, but there is some, you know, it is the, so that's using bhakti. There's gona bhakti, it's called bhakti as secondary. So we do not recommend this at all to nobody, even though it may create some favorable environment to help the person approach. And there is Pradhanya Bhakti, and Bhakti is the main objective. Is it okay? So the last purpose. So what Prabhupada does, Prabhupada helps us to not lose the track, so to not be, because we are lazy nowadays. We take the book, we do not finish it. We finish it, we do not think about it. We read it, we think about last evening conversation with somebody else. So that's why Prabhupada, every purport, he writes, one should therefore understand that Buddha Yoga means to work in Krishna consciousness. You know, so that even if you just read one paragraph, you will not be misled. In full bliss and knowledge of devotional service, one who works for the satisfaction of the Lord only, however difficult such work may be, is working under the principles of Buddha Yoga and finds himself always in transcendental bliss. Are we always in transcendental bliss? So, do you practice Buddha Yoga or Bhakti Yoga? By such transcendental engagement, one achieves all transcendental understanding automatically by the grace of the Lord, and thus his liberation is complete in itself, without his making extraneous endeavor to acquire knowledge. There is much difference between work in Krishna consciousness and work for fruitive results, especially in the matter of sense gratification, for achieving results in terms of family or material happiness. Buddhi yoga is therefore the transcendental quality of the work we perform. It's not the work, it's not the example, it's the transcendental quality of the work we perform. Isn't it beautiful? So that's why we are studying, so that we can understand what am I doing? Why do I not feel transcendental bliss, and what to do to feel transcendental bliss? And after all, Prabhupada writes, concludes that in this is 1876, the result of Krishna consciousness is that one becomes increasingly enlightened and he enjoys life with a thrill not only for some time, but at every moment. That's the result. Okay, now I have a question for you. And I would ask you to break into pairs of five, groups of three or four or five, so we can have five and five, yeah, two groups, and okay, maybe this can be a pair of six or two pairs of three. What do you prefer? What's easier for you? Okay, let's have, maybe you can join. And the question is, Prabhupada writes here in the purport to 39 that Krishna wanted to explain to Arjuna that by killing the body of his grandfather, he would not be killing the soul proper. So that was the argument about compassion. Also in the second chapter, Prabhupada speaks about the misdirected compassion. Compassion to the dress instead of the soul. You can look at my dress and think, oh, he has a hole there, he has some already worn there. Oh, I should get him a new dress, and then he grab me and take me out of the blissful Krishna Katha and just, you know, and think only about this. Anyway, the proper example is saving the dress and not the person who is drowning.